Welcome to Stories of Divorce Resiliency. My name is Sherry Smith, and I'll be your host. I am a marriage and family therapist and certified divorce coach. I work with people every day in my private practice who are in all stages of the divorce process. In this podcast, I'll be interviewing people with inspiring post-divorce stories, as well as experts from the industry to help you no matter where you are on your divorce journey. Divorce is one of life's most painful transitions. It can feel as though your life just imploded. I believe the events in our lives that are the most painful also present an opportunity for personal growth, change, and evolution. Let's start building your new life together today.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for joining me today. In today's episode, this is going to be a solo episode where you're just going to be hearing from me. I've been doing a lot of thinking about what I'd like to present, and there's a topic that I haven't covered yet in any of my episodes, and I feel like is relevant to my listeners, and that is how to have a successful single life post-divorce. So many of my clients that I work with, I've noticed, have a lot of fear around what comes after they leave their marriage. And, you know, they're floundering, they're trying to get their feet under them as a newly single person, and they kind of need some guidance in that regard. So I will often say that divorces are incredibly painful, but they also give you a clean slate with which to build your new life from. So I do a lot of work with my clients and helping them start that process. So the title of this episode will be Six Steps to a Successful Single Life. So I've broken this down into six easy steps that I feel are pretty easy for anybody to follow. So the first step would be allowing yourself to fully grieve. So as I mentioned, marriage's ending is incredibly painful. The grieving process is right up there with death of a family member. So you need to honor your grieving process. A lot of people try to push through it, distract themselves from it, busy themselves through it, or in general, just stuff those feelings, and that's not healthy. What you do is you just prolong the process. So you really need to lean into that grieving process, allow yourself to feel all of those feelings, experience all the stages of grief, and the timing for how long that takes is very individual to you. I do find in general, and this is very general, that it's about 3 years for my clients to get to the other side. Now, don't go to the bank with that. It's going to be different based on each person. But where you are now, assuming you're at the early stages of your grieving process, is very different from where you will be 3 years from now. So the first year usually is what the heck just happened. Year two is let's fix what we did wrong in year one. And year three is let's get used to the new normal. So the whole family system is grieving in that three-year process. So everybody has a different way of expressing that grief. So trying to understand that and be compassionate to the family system, everybody in the family system and their own unique grieving process is helpful as you're moving through it. But this topic is about you individually as you're trying to move through your own grief. So leaning into it, allowing yourself to feel it. Grief tends to be an evolving process. When you're first moving into the grieving process, you're going to find that you have more bad days than good days. So you're going to have more days of waking up with a pit in your stomach, laying in bed in the fetal position, trying to push through your day, tearfulness throughout the day, maybe a lot of anger. Over the top anger, feeling like you're obsessed with it, that you got to tell everybody about it and talk about it all the time. You become your divorce story. That tends to be more pervasive in the early stages of the grieving process. You'll have more bad days than good. Then as you move along in your grieving process, you'll reach a point where the good days and the bad days kind of equal out. And then eventually you'll get to where you have more good days than bad. When you get to that stage, you might suddenly wake up and realize, wow, I've had a month of good days and I haven't really had a bad day in a long time. Well, then suddenly you'll have a bad day and you will think it's a setback. Try not to look at it that way. Don't shame yourself for having the setback. That's just a layer of grief that needs to come off. So if you will, again, lean into that, you'll find over time with your setbacks, they tend to be shorter and less acute. You're able to recover faster. So if you really honor that grieving process, you will get to that point, and then eventually you won't have any more setbacks, and it just kind of the experience becomes part of your inner landscape. So it is helpful as you're moving through the grieving process to be intentional with your grief. So what does that mean? You might be asking. So essentially what that is you are carve out time to express your grief proactively. So maybe you put the kids to bed, you're feeling kind of cheerful that day, you put the kids to bed, and then you put on a movie that's really sad and you just bawl. You like really cry and get those tears out. Or you sit in the tub and listen to some sad music and cry your eyes out. If you can be proactive in that way, when you need to be grounded and present for your children or for your job or just to live your life, you're better able to do that because you express the grief at a time that was more convenient. So that tends to be really helpful. You can also, let's just say, for example, you're experiencing a lot of anger, sitting in the car and screaming to the top of your lungs. Believe it or not, that has a calming effect. Putting a picture of your ex in a chair and screaming at it, or putting a picture of your ex on a punching bag and punching the punching bag. Those are all techniques you can use to express the grief. I'm also a big fan of journaling. Journaling, if you never journaled, now's the time to start. Getting those feelings out in written form can help it get help you get it out of your head and onto a page. It kind of externalizes it a little bit for yourself. You can also, prayer is really helpful. Meditation, walks in nature. You can go outside and just put your bare feet in the grass. That's a technique called grounding that tends to have a calming effect. Exercise is really good for getting yourself present and grounded. Also, therapy is really helpful. This is a great time to get into therapy or join a support group or do both. Those are all really helpful. You can also hire a coach, a life coach to help you. This is a good time for that as well. So those are all techniques that you can use to help yourself through the grieving process, but the only way out is through it. There's no other way around it. You've got to go through it in order to get to the other side. This is a really good time to start reading self-help material. Sometimes you need inspiration when you're in a dark place, and having some self-help material that kind of helps you make sense of what you're feeling can be really helpful. I have a book that I recommend to people quite often that I wrote called Divorce Resiliency, Release the Trauma of Your Divorce and Reconnect with Your Best Self. It's a great little short book to help you in the early stages within the first 2 years of separation from your spouse. So that's essentially step one. You need to get through that grieving process, honor and respect your grieving process, and don't get impatient with it. Allow yourself to fully grieve. If you feel like you're getting stuck and you're not able to move past a certain stage of grief, that's when you might elicit the help of a therapist to help you get past that feeling of being stuck. I find people get stuck when they're really focused on things that are outside of their control. So helping yourself kind of redirect that thinking to focus more on areas that are within your control tends to be more empowering and helps you get unstuck. So step number two, reclaiming your identity. So with divorce, a lot of people jump into relationships really quickly. They blame their partner for everything that happened in the marriage, and they jump into the next relationship thinking that person's going to get them in a way that their first spouse didn't. And they are missing a big opportunity to figure out who they are. So divorce presents you with an opportunity to reclaim your identity and figure out who you are as a person, especially those areas that you may have lost, or you may decide to reinvent yourself. And I feel like a lot of this starts with society's narrative about being married versus being single. So there's this narrative in our society that you've got to be married to be happy. And I know plenty of people who have very happy and successful single lives, very fulfilling and happy, successful single lives. So getting yourself okay with the fact that you're single and that you can potentially really be really happy as a single person is a good place to start. If you really identified as a married person, if you kind of really, that was a big part of your identity, then your identity is in flux right now. So trying to get your feet under you as a single person and who you are outside of the marriage is a big step in the right direction. How much of yourself did you lose in your marriage and your family from being a caretaker? Especially for women, there's this big expectation that you have to give up everything to be a good mom and to be a good wife. You have to give up all of yourself in order to do that well. So is that where you're coming from? And if so, let's change that. Let's change that up and figure out who you are outside of that role. For men, sometimes it comes from being a provider and being a good father and being a good husband. That means you got to provide and you put everything into that. So who are you outside of being the provider and the father and the husband? So asking yourself those questions can help you start to get some clarity. And the first way you might do that is start thinking about some things that you used to love to do that you don't do anymore. Think about early, maybe when you were single before you got married, or even early in your marriage before you had kids. What were some things that you did that you really enjoyed that you'd kind of let go of and the responsibilities of raising a family? Let's try to reconnect with those and bring those back into your life. You can really reinvent yourself in a positive way. You can change to a better version of yourself, maybe a more kinder or more compassionate person, a more empathetic person. This is your opportunity to really change who you are and some of the qualities about yourself that you maybe aren't so proud of. This is a great opportunity to do that. What about your physical body? Are you feeding it with good nutrition and are you exercising? Does your outside reflect how you feel on the inside? So that's something you want to think about. Step number three, build a community of support. So when you're going through a divorce, it's really important to think about the people that are surrounding you. So divorce also presents an opportunity to let go of relationships that no longer serve you and to start bringing in relationships that feel more nurturing and more supportive. So taking a look at your friendships, I find that a lot of my clients have kind of lost all their friendships in the course of their marriage and focusing on the family. They don't have that many friendships outside of the relationship, outside of their marriage and family. So this is a good time to start thinking about starting to build some of those friendships. And you might do that through joining meetup groups. Meetup.com is a great resource. Check that out. There, you can join meetup groups and connect with people that way. You can join a support group. You can get involved in your church. But you want to be very careful when you're especially in the early stages of the divorce about who you share your story with. So I find with a lot of my clients, because they're so obsessed and consumed with their divorce, they tend to overshare and you end up becoming vulnerable to bad advice, or perhaps the people you're sharing with start sharing with other people. They don't respect your boundaries. So you want to be very careful about who you share with. So imagine that your friendships, imagine you're in a house, and in terms of your friends, you want to think about the rooms of the house. So let's just say in your bathroom, you only let a few of your friends in the bathroom with you. Then you might have some friends that you won't let in the bathroom, but you can let them in your bedroom. Or maybe they don't come in the bedroom, but they're allowed in the kitchen. Maybe they can't come in the house. Maybe they stay in the yard. So you want to think of boundaries in that way. Think about who you want to allow close to you and who you feel like you need to have wider boundaries with, more clear boundaries with. So that's important. So as you move through the early stages of your divorce, really thinking about the people that you have around you and how you might start to attract people that are more aligned with the higher version of yourself.
Are you within 3 years of separation or divorce from your spouse and feeling lost on where to go from here? If so, check out my book, Divorce Resiliency: Release the Trauma of Your Divorce and Reconnect with Your Best Self. My intention with this book is to give you a practical step-by-step guide to climb out of the darkness and into the light. You'll read inspiring case studies of women just like you. My book also includes exercises and interventions arming you with the tools you need to not only survive, but thrive. You can go on to create a life that is happier and healthier than you ever imagined. Just some of what is offered in this book includes actionable advice on managing your emotions and changing a relationship with your former spouse, unwinding from codependency and trauma bonding, reclaiming your identity and creating more balance and fulfillment in your life, strategies for re-entering the mysterious world of dating, healthy co-parenting techniques, including blended family dynamics. Grab a copy on Amazon.com or from my website, divorceresiliency.com.
Step number four is creating purpose and meaning. So sometimes when you're out of a marriage, you maybe don't really have purpose and meaning anymore, especially if the kids are maybe more independent now and you've put a lot of your purpose and meaning in raising your children. It's a good time to really think about what purpose and meaning you can create for yourself outside of the family. So how does purpose and meaning play a role in self-esteem? So I find this area, purpose and meaning, is crucial to healthy self-esteem. If you are doing or involved in something outside of your family that you feel really feeds you in a deep way, you feel like you're really good at it, or you feel like you are giving back in a way that feels really good to you. Perhaps you're a person that really thrives on service and you really feel like you're giving back in a way that feeds that. So thinking about how to create purpose and meaning in your life, it might be that it might show up for you in other ways, but thinking about that and thinking about it from that perspective of what will feed my self-esteem, that is crucial. And thinking about what you feel passionate about beyond your family, beyond your children and your ex-husband or ex-wife, what do you feel really passionate about? Is there a reason for you to get out of bed that isn't just for your kids? Think about that. Think about what would make me get excited to get out of bed in the morning. If you are in a career and you're not happy in it, this is a great time to be thinking about that. Think about, you know what, maybe it's time for me to go back to school, take some classes, or change careers into something that feels more fulfilling. So purpose and meaning is crucial to creating a successful single life. Are there causes or volunteer opportunities that you'd like to get involved in? Let's just say you're in a position where you aren't able to change jobs or start a career right now, but you still want to create purpose and meaning. You can do that through volunteering or getting involved in causes that you have passion for. Are you a spiritual person? And are any of your spiritual beliefs coming from limiting beliefs that were taught to you as a child? So this is a great opportunity to really think through your spiritual beliefs and what makes sense and what doesn't, and how do you want to change it up and make your spirituality more aligned with who you are now as a person. So this is a good time to do that. And that might be, when I say spirituality, it's not necessarily religion. So spirituality is how you connect with a higher being. Religion is how you practice that. You bring it down to earth and you practice it in your day-to-day life. Some people don't need the religion to have the spirituality. Some people really like having the religious practice to keep spirituality priority in their lives. So really thinking through what you believe from a spiritual perspective and creating meaning that way is another way to go about achieving step number four. Now we're going to advance to step number five, which is learning to enjoy your own company. So if you have a full life, if you've really done the work and you've created a full life and you really enjoy your own company, you won't be in danger of losing yourself in another relationship. I believe the healthiest relationships, each person has a sense of autonomy. So in other words, they have a sense of their own identity and they have a life outside of the relationship. But there's an area in which they are able to connect and overlap their lives. Let's work on creating a full life so that you don't lose yourself again. Having a sense of who you are and learning to enjoy your own company means that you're going to be more calm and present. You're going to have less anxiety and depression if you really enjoy being with yourself. You're going to have a healthier self-esteem. You're going to be modeling healthy autonomy to your kids. So if you have a really strong sense of who you are and you have a sense of what makes you happy, you're going to show up in a happier, healthier way for your kids, and you're going to give them a great role model. If you don't like yourself, how are you going to expect other people to feel about you? So it's really important for you to really like yourself before you start trying to put yourself out there and date again. You're going to make better decisions in relationships. You're going to come from a place of, you know what, I want to be with a partner. I don't need to necessarily be with a partner. So that energy can change. It can completely change who you select as a partner. So that's another reason why it's really crucial to be comfortable with your own company. You can take yourself out on dates when you're in the early stage of the grieving process. So many people, they'll say, I don't want to go to that festival by myself, or I don't want to go hiking by myself. You know, of course you want to consider safety, but change it up a little bit. Think of it as you're going with yourself. You're taking yourself out on a date. Just having that shift in your mindset can make a big difference. And then step number six, new relationship, better this time around. So in most cases, people are going to end up in another relationship. I will have clients come to me, they're fresh out of their marriage, and oh, no way am I ever going to date again. I can't even imagine it. I can't even hardly stand the sight of the opposite sex. I hear that quite a bit. And usually within a few months, they're out there dating again. And within, you know, probably 6 months or so, they're starting to date, they have another relationship. So you want to go about it in a healthier way this time around. Think of relationships as icing on the cake of your already awesome life. So if you've done all the other steps leading up to this one, you will have created a really awesome life. And the person that you bring into your life will be more like icing on the cake. If it were to not work out, you won't be so uprooted. It won't be so devastating because you have this great life that you can step right back into. So what I find is oftentimes people date too soon. They jump out there too soon. As I mentioned earlier in step one, they jump into the dating pool too soon without doing the work on themselves. And you're missing an opportunity to really figure out who you are. A lot of people will date like they're in their 20s versus dating like a mature adult. So you want to go at it like a mature adult. You want to think about your boundaries. Are you just interested in having fun? If you're going out there and dating and you just want to have a good time and you're not looking for anything serious, be honest about that. If you want a relationship, be honest about that. So putting yourself out there, being clear on your boundaries, being careful about who you choose to have in your life, being more discerning about who you choose as a partner will go a long way. And not having the relationship erode at your self-esteem, but actually feeding your self-esteem. Which brings me to the next topic of vulnerability and dating. So sometimes when somebody jumps into the dating pool too soon, they are still really vulnerable from the events that happened in their marriage. Perhaps they haven't fully grieved. They're still in the midst of that grieving process, or maybe they are carrying a lot of shame, or they're carrying a lot of hurt from what happened in the marriage, and they're out there dating to try to self-medicate that. That can actually make matters worse. That can make you feel worse about yourself and make the shame worse and all that pain worse. So you want to be really careful about going out there when you're feeling really vulnerable. Dating can be hard, and you want to make sure you're coming from a healthy place when you go about it. You want to pay attention to how you show up in your relationship. So as you start to date again, notice if you're repeating some patterns, that maybe some negative patterns that you've had in previous relationships. It's a good opportunity to make those changes and shift how you show up in the relationship. Let's say, for example, you've always been really emotionally reactive when someone tells you something you don't want to hear. This is a good time to learn how to self-soothe, how to sit with those feelings and not react, so that you're able to have a more productive conversation with your partner. Also, you want to think about the kind of person you want to bring into your life. Perhaps you want to consider creating a vision board that kind of illustrates your ideal relationship. Some of my clients, I'll work with them on creating a manifest list, all the qualities that they want to attract in their future partner. All of those things, not only will it provide hope, but it helps you get clear on what you'd like to attract in your next relationship. And then you want to work on being the person that would attract that person. So you want to work on the other five steps leading up to this sixth step and get to that place where you feel like you're operating from your highest and best self. So you're going to attract a person that's going to align with that version of you. So hopefully these six steps have really helped. I'm just going to recap them really quickly. Step number one is allowing yourself to fully grieve. Step number two is reclaiming your identity. Step number three is building a community of support. Step number four is creating purpose and meaning in your life. Step number five is learning to enjoy your own company. And step number six is doing a new relationship better this time around. So my hope is that this has been helpful in giving you some guidance on how to get your feet under you as a single person and doing it successfully where you really have a happy and fulfilling life. It is definitely possible. I see it every day in my practice. I want that for you. And I would love to hear from you to see if these steps, if you were able to implement these steps and if you found them to be helpful. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Do you feel you have an inspiring post-divorce story that can help others? If so, please drop an email to info@divorceresiliency.com. If you'd like to be informed when new episodes are released, please click the follow button in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. Please feel free to leave a review. Until next time, have a great week.